Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome into another edition of Slow Your Roll. I am Dominic Lorenzano, and it's going to be a very different style show today as my co-host, my compadre, Jesse Caulfield, is not in today. He is out. And therefore, it's going to be quick, sort of, you know, it's just too much happened, I felt like, in the week to just completely not address it. So this will be me, unfiltered, uninterrupted, quickly going through the slate of football, playoff baseball, and some college football as well. And yeah, keep rocking and rolling. And like I said, a lot of happened. We had some major upsets. The Pats lost once again. So let's dive right in right now. So I think most fans in New England are coming around on this. But some stubbornly are not, and one of them is actually the co-host here with me, Jesse Caulfield, it seems, last week, who didn't want to completely come around on this. But, I mean, at this point, I would actually be shocked if Bill Belichick is the coach of the Patriots next year. I truly would be. Unless somehow they turn this around and end up being a more respectable team with about 7 wins. But the way that this roster looks right now, the way the offense looks, that's just a hard sell. I can't see that happening. And the other thing that I just don't understand is how so many fans don't get that Belichick's done after this year. At this point, it's over. And the idea that he's bought himself, he's done so much, he's been so successful, that Robert Kraft and the Pats, they owe it to Bill. Why? Why do they owe it to Bill? Bill Belichick, I mean, listen, if he was a more likable guy, made more friends, was friends with everyone in there, maybe this would be a different story. But those who live by the sword die by the sword. And Belichick always hung his hat on being the most ruthless about football. When it came to personnel decision-making, roster decision-making, football, it was emotionless. There's the famous story that he cut Asante Samuel. I think it was either on Christmas or right before Christmas. Like, Bill, move off a guy a year early instead of a year too late. Doesn't even matter what he's done for you. He tried to trade Gronk. So those who live by the sword die by it. And I just think it's wild to me to think that a guy who hung his hat on being like that and acting like that and being that ruthless, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing. It worked for years. It was like the greatest dynasty in football. I watched it my whole adult life. They were better than everybody else. It worked. But the idea that a guy like that, you owe it to him to, why? Why? They've been bad for 3 years now. And Robert Kraft, let's forget the fact that Robert Kraft is a businessman. And he's looking at the product on the field that, once again, not only is it not good, they're boring. His business is boring. They might be the most boring watch of the NFL. They probably have been the most boring watch for at least the last 2 years, maybe even three. The only one who might be more boring is Carolina. So the product not only isn't up to the standard or up to what it was, it's just flat out boring. I had money riding on that Pats Raiders game, and I still struggled to stay awake at times. They're the worst watch in the NFL. So the fact that businessman Robert Kraft, who once again has a boring product that people don't want to watch, Pats fans will watch it. Some, although many I know, tune out of the game still even now. So the fact that he wouldn't move on from a guy who's as grumpy and ruthless and unemotional as Bill Belichick just completely blows my mind. That Pats fans just can't seem to wrap their brains around the fact that why would the leash be any longer for Belichick? He never operated that way anyway, and he operated as, I can do whatever I want. I can act however I want to anybody else. And that works when you're winning. That works when the product is great. That works when you're better than anybody else. But that's just no longer the case anymore. So the idea that, they don't, he's not coming back next year. He's just not. And on the Mac, you know, me and Jesse yell at each other so much on this show on Mac Jones. And, you know, I got to give the kid his flowers. He did make an amazing throw against the Raiders to Devontae Parker, that Parker drop that at least would have put them in great position to go down the field and win that game. But as I've said before with Mac, and it showed up again in the Raiders game, it's a one-score game. You're driving on Las Vegas. It's second and four. This isn't fourth down and you have to make a play. Third down, you have to. It's second and four. You're in the driver's seat. And Mac rolls out of the pocket. Forget the fact that the replay shows Hunter Henry's open well before Mac throws that ball way early in the play. Take that out of it. Mac rolls out of the pocket, nearly out of bounds, jump throws off 1 foot like he's Josh Allen. Like, Mac, you can't do stuff. First off, Josh probably shouldn't even make a throw like that. Second off, though, Mac, you're not that talented. You're just not. And I'm not going to sit here and say that he's been given everything in the world, because he has not. But for a guy with the, I've said this before so many times, with a guy like Mac, the way that it has to work, the only way it's going to work, and he shouldn't have been a first-round pick, historically, guys of his physical attributes and size have never been first-round picks. But if it's going to work, the character needs to be A+, and the decision-making needs to be A++. And his decision-making is awful. It's just absolutely terrible. He makes throws that could get you benched in high school. And so if you're going to be a limited talent, you can't do stuff like that. And I don't care what the O-line situation, what the weapon situation is, there's never an excuse in the NFL to do dumb things, to commit dumb turnovers as a quarterback. There's not. Now, there is, and life's not fair, there is a difference in how much I will tolerate stupidity, and Josh Allen is allowed to be a little stupid, and Patrick Mahomes is allowed to be stupid sometimes, because those guys are so wildly talented and they give you the amazing playmaker ability on the other end that you can live with the mistakes sometimes. You can live with them sometimes. For a guy like Mac, he doesn't give you anything special. So for you to win games, he has to play, not perfectly, but he can't turn the football over. And he especially cannot commit costly, dumb turnovers that turn into pick sixes, scoop and scores, or just at critical times while you're driving in a one-score game, give the football back. It's not going to work. And it's no different with Mac than it would have been with a guy like Andy Dalton or Kirk Cousins coming up. Like, those guys, they aren't allowed. We don't have the tolerance for them to make as many mistakes as the guy on the upper range of talent. That it's just the cold, hard fact. The NFL, really, all these games, you know, every week, oh, this team sucks. This one's decent. There's no way this is going to be a close. Most NFL games are about a field goal difference. So if you lose the turnover battle or you throw a pick six or a scoop and go look at the stats. Go look at the win percentage when you lose the turnover battle in the NFL. You lose most of the time. Unless you're Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes. But for everybody else who's not, you know, the most gifted player at the position of everyone in the United States of America, we're talking about three or four different, that's it. If you're not one of those guys, you got to play within the system. You got to play within the rules. The rules are, the numbers say, if you lose the turnover battle in the NFL, you're probably going to lose the game. So guys like Mac, that's unacceptable. It's just unacceptable. And year three, if you're that bad of a decision maker still, it's over. He's not a starter in this league. He's not going to be a starter anywhere else. It's just done. You can't, guys like that, they can't do stuff like that. So it is what it is. Switching gears, though, staying with the NFL. So, Philadelphia and San Francisco both lose. Both were due to lose. They had undefeated records. Philly loses to the Jets. San Francisco loses to the Browns. And I love the way Twitter media works. You know, everyone instantly, especially when it came to Brock Purdy and the Niners, just ripping Brock Purdy. Oh, the minute he doesn't have this, or McCaffrey or Debo, he sucks. I also, this is why I'm so anti-weekly power rankings. Everybody in the freaking media, suddenly Philly loses one game, and now we're going to put Miami as like the second best team. We'll put Detroit over Philadelphia. We'll put Philadelphia down at like 5 or 6. Who has Miami beaten? They played one good team, Buffalo, and they got curb stomped. I'm not saying Miami's not a good team. They're a good team. But it's the NFL. Like, anybody can win on any given week. So the idea that I'm going to change my power rankings for the undefeated team who was in the Super Bowl last year, I'm going to change the power rankings this week. And not by like one or two spots, like 3 or 4 spots. I'm going to put them down because they lost one game in a game that Jalen Hurts turned the ball over 3 times. You can't turn the ball over 3 times and win in the NFL. It's just, I don't know the stat on that, but I think we all know that. You commit 3 turnovers in a game in the NFL. I mean, if you're Alabama playing Vanderbilt, you can get away with that, but not in the NFL. And so I just think it's so, and you know, I want to give Brock Purdy credit because Debo goes down, McCaffrey goes down. He played horrible, maybe like easily his worst game as a pro. He hadn't lost a game yet as a pro. Plays horrible. And yet at the end of that game, when they needed him, when it was the kind of have it moment, he drove them down the field and put them in position to kick a game-winning field goal. He doesn't make the kicks. So he played terribly. He also played terribly, though, against what is statistically the best defense in the NFL. The Browns are statistically the best defense in the NFL. We can debate if they are the best, but if you don't put them at least top three, then you don't know what you're talking about. Like, the Browns' front is absurd. It's not just Myles Garrett anymore. They have dudes all over the place. They do have a decent secondary now as well. Like they are absolutely stacked defensively. And as for Philly, I mean, to me, maybe if you put them down one spot, but even then, I don't see it. I think they're the second best team. Now, they've certainly been dancing through the raindrops sometimes on some of these games. It does feel like they haven't clicked on all cylinders. And, you know, that you have 2 new coordinators, right? A new offensive play caller. It does feel like sometimes they are trying to find their identity. They don't quite know what they are this year. And, you know, I think this week against the Jets, it was due to happen. And two, I think it's going to be the sort of come to Jesus moment where they figure it out. Because from a sort of, I don't want to say individual play calling was awful, but when you go and look at it, the overall, I don't know what you want to call it, game management was bad. I mean, Jalen Hurts has 45 pass attempts. DeAndre Swift has just 10 carries. Gainwell and Scott have 2 carries apiece. So that's 45 pass attempts and only 14 running plays from your running back. Jalen, of course, runs himself. But only 14 running plays. And DeAndre Swift has been an absolute beast this year running the football. And you're facing the New York Jets. And it's not like you trailed in this game early. No, the Eagles were actually in front early in this game. They were in front for most of the game. So from a game management, game flow perspective, it's just kind of egregious. Now, this happens. Sean McVay seems like he goes through this for about 2 to 3 weeks every year where he just gets super pass happy and needs to like come back and reel it in. And I kind of feel like that's what happened to Philly this week. I don't think it's been what they've done all year. They've handed the ball off and ran it with DeAndre Swift. I don't know if it was them hitting that big throw to A.J. Brown. I don't know if it was just the fact that DeAndre Swift with his 10 carries was only averaging about 2 yards a carry, but it's Zach Wilson. Even if you're so far only getting, like running the ball, especially with a team as big and physical as the Eagles, part of it is just about wearing down your opponent. And let's keep that clock moving, and let's, you know, let's not give Zach Wilson short fields. Like, it's Zach Wilson. Make him go the length of the field on you more often. So it happens. I think Philly just let it happen this week, and they'll go back to the drawing board over this week, coming into this Miami game, and they will correct it. They will fix it. They know what they did wrong, I'm sure, once they go and look at this game on film and go look at the stats and realize, yeah, we probably got way too pass happy. Like, way too pass happy. The funny thing is, they were already getting pass happy, and then Jalen Hurts hits A.J. Brown on a bomb, like, huge play. And in a way, even though it was a great play for the Eagles, it was also kind of the undoing of Philly. Because it felt like after they hit that, they're like, oh my, like, they're just going to keep throwing it even more. That's what happened. So, Philly, I think Philly will get it corrected. As for San Francisco, I thought it was encouraging that Brock could play as horribly as he did, lose some of the guys around him that I'm sure they game planned with and practiced with all week going into the game against statistically the best defense in the NFL. And when it came down to a gotta-have-it drive, Brock made it happen. They went down the field, and they were in position to win the game. I feel no differently today about San Francisco and Philadelphia as I did at any other point this year. And again, this is why I just think shows and people who do weekly power rankings is stupid. I think it's dumb. You know, there's sayings I've heard about the NFL. The NFL stands for the Not For Long League. The other one I've heard is, you know, the Sundays are crazy, right? The Sundays are crazy, but the year ends up being mostly predictable. And that's true. There are so many times that you look at a team schedule and you go, all right, this is a W here. Oh, that's probably a loss. And you pencil in W's and L's. Now, there's shocks every year in the league as far as final records. But so many times, even the same teams who end up winning the division, who you thought were going to win the division coming into the year, they have so many games that you look back at the schedule and go, wait a minute, I thought that was a W. They just lost this week. And so when you're in that moment on the Sundays, as I said, the Sundays are crazy. And so people have a tendency to react so much to those. But the year ends up being largely predictable. I mean, it's been the same teams in the AFC at the end the last couple of years. Philly was a bit of a surprise last year, but I think we all knew that they'd be there at the end by about week 9, week 10. They looked so great. The Niners have been at the top every year. Like, you know, there's three or four shocks in the league every year as far as teams that we thought would be great and they're bad, and then teams we thought would be bad, they'd be great. But when it comes to the upper echelon, I mean, for the most part, usually when you come into the year, most divisions, their favorite to win it is minus a good 130-something. And more often than not, they win it. Even when they drop a game to the freaking Jets with Zach Wilson that you penciled in as a win before the season. They still win the division, and they win about as many games as Vegas said they were going to win, and about as many games as most of us thought they were going to win. So weekly power rankings are stupid. With that, because it is me alone doing the talking today, we got to take a quick break here after that intro. And then when we come back, it'll be more football. But we're going to get into some college football, talk LSU and USC. So stick with us, guys. And we are back here at Slow Your Roll. Moving on, let's talk some college football. There's a lot of big games last week. We're going to narrow in on the ones that I think have the most to talk about. Oregon and Washington was amazing. It was an amazing watch. But, I mean, I think the game was, I mean, it was basically about the Vegas line. It was close like we all thought. Dan Lanning, I think, had some questionable decision-making at times. But I don't think we're overly shocked by anything that happened in that game. So it's not, there's not a ton to dive into, even though it was one of the bigger, if not the biggest matchup over the weekend. We'll talk about the one I know, though, most about. LSU put together their best performance of the year against Auburn, beating them 48-18. A completely dominating performance. The defense looked so much better than it has at any point this year. They held Auburn to 293 total yards of offense. And the big thing, Auburn was only 3 of 12 on third down. Now, Auburn is 3-3. You can tell me, oh, it's Auburn. Oh, it's a new coach. I don't know. I saw them go head-to-head with Georgia. I saw them punch Georgia in the mouth. So I don't think you can just brush this aside as, oh, LSU is just way better than Auburn. They're better than Auburn. They're more talented than Auburn. But Auburn that's a good football team. And I visited this year down there when they were in camp. And not in camp. It was during, right before the start of the season. Saw some of the facilities and stuff. Like Hugh Freeze over there, whatever you think of him, I'm not going to say that he's going to run a high character program. That remains to be seen if he's able to do that in the SEC or if he was only just able to do that at Liberty. We'll see. But he definitely runs a high level operation there. And he's a high IQ, he's a good coach. He's a really good coach. He's clever. And like I said, they gave Georgia all they could handle. So LSU's defense was way better than it has been at any point this year. And Jaden Daniels was just absolutely amazing. 20 for 27, 325 yards and 3 touchdowns. Now, Penix has the bigger win since he beat Oregon. And Washington is undefeated, so I'm sure Penix leads in the Heisman. But you can't tell me there's anybody in the country right now who's playing better than Jaden Daniels. Maybe Penix is playing as well as Jaden Daniels. But no one in the country is playing better than Jaden Daniels. And that brings me to exactly what I want to talk about, which LSU fans, I'm sure, are still unhappy with Brian Kelly and want to grumble about Brian Kelly. But, I mean, go look at what Jaden Daniels was at Arizona State. He wasn't this. He wasn't even close. He wasn't even the same player. Go look at what Jaden Daniels was last year. Very good. Better than he was at Arizona State. Brian Kelly in 1 year already had made him a lot better than he was at Arizona State. And then second year under Brian Kelly and his coaching, who again, Brian Kelly is an offensive guy, high IQ offensive guy. Jaden Daniels is the best college quarterback in the country. I'm not saying he's the best NFL prospect, but he's playing the best of any quarterback in the entire country. Second year with Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly is a damn good coach. Brian Kelly knows what he's doing. He thought Marcus Freedman was going to come with him as a defensive coordinator. Did you watch USC and Notre Dame over the weekend? Yeah, Marcus is pretty damn good. And Kelly's an offensive guy. And he thought he was going to have someone at the caliber of Marcus that was going to run the defense. And he wasn't going to have to worry about that. Now, I don't know if Notre Dame did it out of spite. I don't know if it was Kyle Hamilton going on his podcast, which at the time was on Colin Cowherd's Volume Network, and championing that Marcus Freeman should be their next coach, and having people on from Notre Dame who said that they wanted Marcus to be their next coach. I don't know. But Marcus, I felt like, other than after Hamilton talked, kind of came out of left field as the option. He was young. He had no head coaching experience. So I think, and rightly so, I think Brian Kelly fully expected that Marcus was going to come with him. And then he didn't. So he had to go looking for a defensive coordinator. And again, coordinators in college aren't as good, normally, as coordinators in the NFL. They're just not. Now, Matt House came from the NFL. He didn't have an NFL job anymore. And Kelly had to look for a new DC. And that's who he found. And so far, it hasn't worked out. I don't want to blame it all on Matt. They rely on too many transfers for an SEC team that thinks that they should be one of the 5 best teams in the entire country. But that's the reality of the situation. And Jim Harbaugh, by the way, before he got things completely rolling in Michigan, it seemed like he was on the hot seat for a little bit of time. He ran through coordinators before he found the right one. He ran through multiple offensive coordinators. And he's a former quarterback. This isn't Brian Kelly's expertise side of the ball. Now, Brian is a good head coach. Brian is obsessed with football in general. He's not clueless about defense, but it's not his area of expertise. And so LSU fans, you just got to be a bit more patient than this. Kelly had an idea of what he was going to bring to the table, the staff he was going to bring, and a major part of it, if not the biggest part of it, other than himself, Brian Kelly, didn't come. And so he was forced to scramble and find somebody else. Now, I suspect that Matt House will be done after the year. However, if this game means everything that it looked like it could mean, maybe he's not. Maybe they fixed the defense. Time will tell. But again, the other thing with LSU is they don't have to be amazing on defense. They just need to be competent because this is the best offense in college football. After what Notre Dame did to USC, who's better? Maybe Washington and Penix, I guess. But I don't see anyone on the schedule that's going to stop this LSU offense, except when we get to the SEC championship against Georgia. And yes, I said when, because they're going to beat Alabama. Alabama doesn't throw the ball well enough to exploit the weakness that LSU has in its team, and that's the secondary. I don't think Bama throws the ball well enough to exploit the weakness, and I don't think Bama's going to stop the Tigers, at least not enough consistently. So I think Georgia's the only team in the country that you could actually look at and think that it's going to stop this LSU offense, and even then I'm not sure if Georgia will. So LSU is in great position right now. Not in the position that they probably hoped they'd be to start the year. That went up in smoke. They did not start the year the way they should. But I think Kelly is moving the program in the right direction. And for you to tell me he doesn't know what he's doing when you watch Jaden Daniels play now, I think is ludicrous. Speaking of Marcus Friedman in USC, Notre Dame completely dismantled, embarrassed USC. And it's not like the Florida State LSU game where you could say, well, it was close most of the way. And then, you know, they're college kids, momentum's a thing, and it kind of snowballed in the second half. No. Notre Dame scored 24 points in the first half and 24 points in the second half. They were better from the jump, and they were better at the same margin. They outscored them 24-6 in the first half and outscored them again 24-14 in the second half. They were just the better team. And I'm going to make this about Lincoln. And other people have talked about it. I had heard some things from my guy, my source down there in Louisiana who covers college football. Now, he wouldn't come out and say it to the same degree as he talks about other ones, simply just because when Lincoln was at Oklahoma, they were not part of the SEC, but certainly they played a part in the South. Not even just playing games, but just recruiting wise. I mean, it was worth keeping an eye on visiting sometimes. And the thing is with Lincoln Riley is he is obsessed with offense. He's obsessed with the quarterback position, which, I mean, sounds fine on its own. He's the offensive coordinator. He's the offensive play caller. Shouldn't he be obsessed with that? But the problem is it seems like he is really fixated and obsessed with just that and doesn't care that much about the defense. He hands it to Alex Grinch, who is his friend, which is also a problem, that you have a friend who runs the side of the ball that you don't care about and you don't know about. Like, he just doesn't value defense. It shows in his recruiting. They get athletes immediately. All of them go on offense. The minute they sign anyone who's an athlete, he goes on offense. So it's the side of the ball that he doesn't know, and he hands it over to Alex Grinch, his friend. And this was a problem at Oklahoma. It's a problem at USC. The defense isn't good enough. And he doesn't seem to want to get rid of Alex because it's his friend. And Lincoln doesn't care or know enough about defense or recruit it or value it enough to also step in himself and do anything about it if he's going to keep Grinch. So that's the problem. And they're so finesse, and they're so soft. And they were soft at Oklahoma, and they're soft at USC. It's the same theme with Lincoln Riley's teams. And to make it worse, that softness that USC has, you throw in the fact that USC now is also sort of like transfer university. And there's nothing wrong with the transfer portal, but I think that sometimes when you're getting transfers, especially if they're only going to be at your program for 1 year, how bought in are they to their teammates, to the program, to the rivalry games? Like, week to week, how bought in are they? Or are they simply just mercenaries? Because they bowed out in that Notre Dame game. They quit. I feel like someone who went to USC from freshman year to the end, who cared about that rivalry, I just feel like they put up more fight than that. So they paid Lincoln Riley a ton of money, and they didn't pay him a ton of money just to continue to be the quarterback whisperer and put up a bunch of points. They paid him a lot of money to get them back to where Pete Carroll had them, and that was the top tier of college football and capable of winning a national championship. So he hasn't shown the ability to field a defense that is capable of doing that. He hasn't done it at Oklahoma, and he hasn't done it at USC yet either. And I know it's only his second year at USC, but I have multiple years at Oklahoma to point to and say he never put together a defense that's even close to being competent enough to win a national championship. So that's the USC problem. And he's going to be too productive and too good that they'll never get rid of him. But unless he changes his ways, unless he fires Alex Grinch, I just don't see that changing. So the last thing here before we take our final break and finish with our final two topics, the MLB playoffs, talked with this with Jesse a couple of different times. I don't think it's been an overly surprising playoffs. I mean, yes, the Braves got bounced, but they got bounced by the team that I think pretty early on we talked about it. And I know I talked about it in my private life with you know, my family who's into sports and friends. That Philadelphia's roster was almost as good as Atlanta's. They have about as many high-end players as Atlanta. So I didn't, if Atlanta was going to get bounced, they were going to get bounced by the Phillies. And with the way the seeding worked out, they were unlucky enough that they had Philadelphia first. And Philadelphia right now is seems like they're about to make quick work of Arizona. Houston pushed back last night, which if Texas had gone up 3-0 or swept Houston, I think we all would have been shocked. I'm sure Houston was the favorite in that series, but not like Philadelphia and Arizona. But I do want to talk about Philly and zoom in on them, because I want to talk about Dave Dombrowski. Because in a world that it seems, especially in baseball, is so paralyzed by analytics, Dombrowski's not. He uses them. Of course, he's not a meathead. He's not stupid. But he cares about the name on the back of the jersey, because he understands that these are human beings and players. And when it comes to winning championships and playing in the playoffs, playoff baseball is different. Baseball is such a mental game. The famous Yogi Berra quote is, "What, you know, this game is 90% mental and the other 10% is in your head." Like, it's a very mental game, and it'll beat you down. And the pressure that's amplified in the playoffs has got to be just so much. And it's not like these other sports where you have teammates that you, like, rely on. And, you know, in football, the quarterback, I got an O-line at least that separates me from the other side and the big uglies. I got wide receivers who can make plays. If I escape the pocket and make a play happen longer, someone will come and help me maybe. in baseball, whether you're pitching or hitting, it's always just you. It's mano-a-mano. And I think that gets in guys' head. I've never seen meltdowns and players unravel quite like the way I've seen some baseball players. Now, I was alive, but I wasn't old enough for Rick Ankiel. So I never really saw that one. But I saw Daniel Bard, who had been great for a couple of years, and then just all of a sudden looked like he forgot how to pitch. I saw A-Rod, who's, one of the 10 most talented players of all time, be terrible with the Yankees in the playoffs. Awful. It was in his head. So, and there's a reason why I feel like the Dodgers keep bowing out in the playoffs. Over-reliance on analytics. They rely on Clayton Kershaw a lot, who you can't even give me the sample size argument anymore. He's been in the playoffs so much and thrown so many innings that it's obvious that he is a significantly worse pitcher in the playoffs. And then you have guys like Nathan Eovaldi, who, I mean, they're decent in the regular season. Nathan had a really good year this year. But he is otherworldly in the playoffs. Curt Schilling was otherworldly. Now, he was a stud anyway, but he was otherworldly in the playoffs. I watched David Ortiz, not just in that playoff run, but just almost his entire career in Boston, just come up with big hit after big hit and big playoff hit after big playoff hit. You can't tell me that's just a random statistical. It's not. Some guys are just different. And Dombrowski has dudes that he likes to bring with him. Kyle Schwarber is one of them, who annoys the crap out of me because as a baseball player, he does the things that I don't like to watch, especially during the regular season. But Dave is never paralyzed by analytics. He knows that the playoffs are different, and he has dudes that he likes bringing with him no matter where he goes, and Schwarber is one of them. When they got Trey Turner this offseason, of course Dave Dombrowski got Trey Turner. And I know he had a terrible season, but he's had a good playoffs, and he had a track record of having success in the playoffs. That's a Dave Dombrowski guy. And Dave went to a World Series last year. He won a World Series with the Red Sox. He constantly at least put the Tigers in position to win some. And now he's got the Phillies once again in a position to go to the World Series. So he's the best. I think he's the gold standard of GMing in baseball and the way it needs to be done. No one says you got to throw analytics out the window, but you can't be paralyzed by them. They're not everything. All right. With that, we will take our final break. I will give you some NFL bets that I'm doing this week. And then we might finish with the Monday Night Football, the Chargers and Cowboys game of last week. So stick with us, guys. And we are back here at Slow Your Roll, getting ready to finish this up. But let's turn to some gambling, shall we? Give you four bets that I have made for this week in the NFL. Now, not all four are created equal. I'll tell you the big one. But let's start with my first one and my least favorite one, the Bears. Now, I got it when they were catching 3.5. I believe it is down to 3 in most books. You can wait and see if the public starts to come in on the Raiders just because they hate the Bears. They didn't cover last week against a bad team in the Vikings that didn't have a win yet. So maybe now that it's down to an even 3, the public might come in on the Raiders. But, I mean, you got to back the Bears in this spot. They probably should have covered against the Vikings. They just got a bad turn or a bad fumble. The Raiders, what it comes down to is, even if Jimmy G plays, which I don't think he is, the Raiders shouldn't be a 3-point favorite on the road against anyone in this league. And the Raiders shouldn't have covered against the Pats last week. But Devontae Parker dropped that ball at the end, and then Mac does the thing you can't do in that situation and take a safety. But the Raiders shouldn't have covered that game against the Pats. And what it comes down to is Vegas shouldn't be a 3-point favorite on the road against anyone in this league, whether Aiden O'Connell is starting, Brian Hoyer, or Jimmy G. There's just too many points. So it's rough, but you got to do it. Second one, I like this one quite a bit. I liked it more at the number that I got it at. I bet it early. I bet it before. I think I bet it before even the Sunday night game had happened. The Chargers plus six against the Chiefs. It's down to 5.5 right now. I'd play this at 5.5. I'd play it at 5. I'd probably still play it at 4.5. These two teams always play close games. You have two uberly talented quarterbacks. Now, Patrick is better. I know that. Chargers are coming off a bad performance against Dallas. Herbert and Kellen Moore, their worst performance of the year. Probably Herbert's worst performance in his career. It's a division matchup. Division matchups, even if they're bad teams against a good team, division matchups always end up closer than the public thinks and what everybody thinks it should be. I thought it was wild that this was at 6 points. The Chiefs' offense, by the way, too, it's not like KC's putting up 30 points a game. This isn't the same Kansas. Now, they have a way better defense, it seems, than they've had any other year with Reed and Mahomes. But when it comes to catching as many points, it's more about the offense than it is about the defense. And I don't think the Chiefs offensively are amazing enough that they're going to cover a number this big. These two teams know each other. They always play close games. Since Justin Herbert has been there, consistently, these are three-point difference games. Sometimes the Chargers win. And can't. And by the way, the Chargers are the far more desperate team in this situation. Another loss here really, really puts their season in jeopardy. And it's just a bounce back spot, which matters in the NFL, especially early. Sometimes late in the year, when teams know their season's over, you can get embarrassed the week before and teams don't bounce back because they've given up. This early in the week, usually teams rebound. The third one, this is my favorite bet of the weekend. One of the bigger bets that I've made in total this season. I don't think it's top three. It might be top five, though, of so far. It's definitely top five, actually, of most money I've put down on a game. That's the Eagles minus 1.5 against Miami. It's up to 2 now. Could be 2.5 in some places. I would take it at 2 and 2.5 still, just not for as much money as I took it at 1.5. Once it gets to 3, maybe I'll start to pass just because the number is not right anymore. But I actually do think there's a chance that the Eagles blow the doors off the Dolphins. And, oh, you're Tua hate. It's not about Tua. Miami's offense is really good. It's dynamic. But they don't have a good defense. Vic Fangio is trying to make chicken salad out of chicken shit. Like, a lot of the defense has aged out. They miss Jalen Ramsey. Xavier Howard, more worried about who he's going to have to pay to get an abortion, I guess, than covering DBs, covering wide receivers. It's a bad defense. And Miami has played one good team, really, the Bills, and they got blown out, destroyed. Plus, the Eagles are coming off a bad loss to a Zach Wilson-led Jets team. You don't think they're going to be pissed off, motivated, spent all week at that drawing board figuring out what the hell went wrong and how to make sure it doesn't happen this week? And the Dolphins have a very, this year as an NFL team, have a very collegiate feel. They kind of feel like when Chip Kelly was at Oregon and they were just so much faster and dynamic that when they played below average to like mediocre teams, they were just so fast that they'd blow these teams out. But the minute the defense is good and can match their speed, now with Oregon, it was lack of physicality. With Miami, it's just lack of talent on defense. But the minute they have a defense that's fast and athletic and rangy and moves from side to side and they can't just run by them every play, it seems like they kind of fold. And I don't want to say fold because that seems like they have a toughness problem. I don't think it's that. I just think that it's just very Oregon Chip Kelly-ish to me. And so there's so many times that they've had these 14.5, 15-point spreads this year, which usually it's hard to cover in the NFL, and they cover them easily. So they're just the kind of team that's going to blow out average to below average. And then my final one, probably second favorite. Nah, I really like the Charger one. Probably slightly under the Charger one. That is Saints. I got it at minus one. I believe it's minus 1.5 now. Jacksonville's won a bunch of games in a row, which usually means in the NFL you're due for a loss. Saints are coming again off kind of an embarrassing performance against the Texans. They have high hopes for their season, so they kind of feel like they need a win. Trevor Lawrence is banged up, and it's a short week. It's tonight. It's the Thursday night game. So even if he plays, it's like you only had a couple of days to actually get right physically. And the Saints have a really good defense. The Saints have been shutting down everybody. And the Texans game, they probably should have won the Texans game. They had some bad luck. CJ Stroud throws a pick, and then the Saints defender immediately fumbles it away after getting the pick and running. So Saints had a little bad luck. Saints need the W way more than Jacksonville, and they're either playing CJ Beathard or they're probably playing a very injured Lawrence because he hasn't had a lot of time to physically get right. So I'll take the Saints. I'll take this up to minus 1.5. At two, I probably might stay away just because their offense is bad. So they could kind of dominate the game, but it could end up being a close game simply because New Orleans doesn't put up enough points. But 1.5, I play this for sure. So in total, Bears plus 3.5, play to 3. Chargers plus 6, play to 5.5. Eagles minus 1.5, I'd play it all the way up to even 2.5. And then the Saints minus 1, play up to minus 1.5. Those are my bets for this week of NFL football. And with that, I want to finish up talking about the Chargers in the Monday Night Football game. And I want to talk about the Cowboys and the Chargers because I kind of feel like they're the same team in a way. Now, one has more talent on defense than the other one does, for sure. And one has a better quarterback, a star quarterback in Justin Herbert. The other has Dak, who's fine. He's B, probably a B quarterback. But they're both super talented rosters that are both led by head coaches that we roll our eyes and shake our heads at. Now, McCarthy's better than Brandon Staley. I don't think anyone in the league is as bad as Brandon Staley. Dennis Allen's pretty bad as a head coach, but I don't think anyone's as ridiculous, as stupid as Brandon Staley. I mean, when they get in the, it feels like when the Chargers are on defense and teams are in third and long, it almost feels like the opponent has the Chargers right where they want them. They just, no one gives up third and longs like a Brandon Staley coach defense here in LA. It's crazy. And he's a defensive play caller. But they're both teams that we feel like underachieve, and they both underachieve for kind of a lot of the same reason. And that is we both think they have second rate in Chargers third rate head coach. 11 penalties in the Monday Night Football game by Dallas for 85 yards, 9 penalties for 79 yards by the Chargers. Many of the Chargers penalties too at key times. Both teams, we feel like, have a really good coordinator. Now, with Dallas, they have a star coordinator, like an amazing coordinator. Dan Quinn is one of the best defensive coordinators in the league. We like Kellen Moore. Let's not say he's as good as Dan Quinn right now. He's not. He's really good, though. And you can see Dallas's offense is suffering since Kellen Moore left. But both teams have super talented rosters. Both teams we feel underachieve. Both teams we feel are undisciplined. And both teams we feel a lot of this is because of the head coach. So I kind of feel like these are both the same teams. And in a way, both teams, when you look at the rosters, they should be right in the Super Bowl mix. But because of that, both teams, I feel, you have to take out of the Super Bowl bubble. You can't win a Super Bowl with this level of undiscipline and this level of poor coaching. Today, Dallas is the fourth best team in the NFC, who we all think is the weaker of the conferences. I don't even know where the Chargers rank in the AFC because there's too many great quarterbacks who have competent, good head coaches with them. So, Chargers are in a better position because this is an easier fix. With Dallas, it's like, at what point are some of the defense going to age out or at least take a step back and you need to find a way better coach? And Jerry Jones has a history of not wanting to hire coaches who will challenge him. So Chargers are in a better position, but I do feel like these are, in a way, kind of the same teams. Very good to elite coordinator on one side of the football. Head coaches that we scratch our head at. By the way, head coaches who their level and area of expertise is the problem with the team. Staley, the defense. Mike McCarthy, the offense. So, same teams, and I don't care what they do to inferior competition. I don't care how many teams Dallas blows out by 30. They're not a Super Bowl contender. And the Chargers, no one thinks is a Super Bowl contender. And Staley's the reason why. So you got to have great coaching in this league. You have to. All right. So this has been an interesting show. We will get back to our normal level of doing things next week. It was kind of fun in a way, but definitely not going to be the way that we do things. Don't expect this to happen again. Or, I mean, maybe someday it does, but certainly not anytime in the near future. But that has been it for Slow Your Roll. Have a great rest of your week, ladies and gentlemen.